Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. Hoo-wah! I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Ever wonder why almost all of our colleges and universities, from the Ivy League on down, have turned into woke indoctrination camps, with real education increasingly in the rearview mirror? I'm betting that it has a lot to do with the big money they are getting from, yes, Communist China. The leader of the pack is Harvard at $93.7 million, followed by the University of Southern California. I hope Congress will ban Chinese money in our universities and our professors. That's my idea. Okay, joining me at the 50 caliber microphone today is Marine vet Skip Coriel. Skip, summer's here, the mushrooms are gone, and it's not yet hunting season. What are you doing with your time?
Well, Colonel, it's fishing season. It's fishing season. There's always something to hunt, Colonel. So I went fishing with my beautiful wife yesterday. I didn't catch a single fish, but we talked an awful lot. You know, the kids weren't there. It was just me and her on a boat in the middle of the lake and, God, just getting reacquainted after 20 years.
You know, that sounds like a good idea.
You should do it too, Colonel.
Well, I don't have any kids. I've got a four. Well, you know, my baby boy's 51. So
yeah, he doesn't bother you too much, huh?
That's true. Okay, here's what we have for you today. A news and comments by the colonel. I'm going to discuss our military's lack of ammunition. Then Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby will contribute his warrant wisdom. Air Force General John Tykert will address a number of our nation's military challenges. Then Doug Voss will discuss the Korean War, which began on June 25th, 1950. Then Army vet Terry Johnson will share about how veterans can deal with the VA in the area of disabilities. And Diane Raver will review the movie of the month. Of course, we'll conclude with our weekly mailbag, military history, and our self-defense report.
Hey, troops, please invite your friends to join us at this time on this great radio station. Then head on out to frontlinesoffreedom.com and sign up for our free e-newsletter. And join the conversation at facebook.com/frontlinesoffreedom.
We really do welcome your input to this show. Send us your ideas and comments through our website, frontlinesoffreedom.com, or you can do it on Facebook. Now it's time for news and comments by the Colonel on Frontlines of Freedom. And we'll start with the news, of course. So what's first, Skip?
Well, Colonel, several U.S. government agencies have been hit in a global cyber attack by Russian cyber criminals that exploits a vulnerability in widely used software. Our Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency is providing support to several federal agencies that have experienced intrusions affecting their MOVE IT applications, agency's Executive Assistant Director for Cybersecurity said, referring to the software impacted. Quote, we are working urgently to understand impacts and ensure timely remediation. Aside from our government agencies, several hundred companies and organizations here could be affected by the hacking spree, a senior CISA official said, citing estimates from private experts. Flop, the ransomware gang allegedly responsible, is known to demand multi-million dollar ransoms, but no ransom demands have been made of federal agencies. The Department of Energy is among multiple federal agencies breached in the ongoing global hacking campaign. The hacks have not had any significant impacts on federal civilian agencies, CISA Director Jan Easterly told reporters.
Okay, we definitely are in a new Cold War. Russia and China are clearly hostile to us, and we need to act like we're at war and treat our enemies as enemies.
And former Russian commander Igor Girkin has accused Wagner Group leader Prigozhin of mutiny for rejecting an order that would require his notorious paramilitary outfit to sign contracts with Russia's defense ministry. Quote, this is an act of mutiny. If you call a spade, Girkin wrote. The Wagner Group has played a critical role in Russia's efforts to seize the industrial town of Bakhmut in Ukraine's eastern region. Throughout the months-long push to take control of Bakhmut, and until the Wagner Group withdrew from the city this month, Prigozhin repeatedly accused Russian Defense Minister Sergei Shoigu of intentionally depriving his fighters of ammunition and support.
Wow, Russia's hired fighters don't like working for Russia anymore? Well, we know Russian leadership at all levels is bad. When your hired help quits, that really says something. I wonder how the Russian soldiers feel about all this.
And Russia is preparing a man-made catastrophe at the Titan chemical plant in annexed Crimea, Kiev's military intelligence agency, GRU, said. Russian forces are mining the workshops of the plant, located in Arkhangelsk in the northern part of the Black Sea Peninsula that Russian President Putin annexed from Ukraine in 2014, according to the GRU. Ukraine has vowed to recapture Crimea in a counteroffensive. Quote, in the temporarily occupied Arkhangelsk in the north of the Crimean Peninsula, the Russians are preparing for the evacuation of both representatives of the occupation administration and the local population, it said. The GRU said that as a result of the destruction of the Nova Kakhovka and the subsequent lack of water in the North Crimean Canal, manufacturing processes at the Crimean Titan plant there have been disrupted to a critical level. Russia and Ukraine blamed each other for the damage to the critical dam in southern Ukraine on the Dnieper River. It was breached on June 6, unleashing water on land as a counteroffensive from Kiev kicked off. Most of the water from the North Crimean Canal is used for farming or industry, but about a fifth is used for drinking water, meeting most of the peninsula's needs.
I think it's really clear that more and more damage is being done to the area, and little progress is being made either way in the war. As I've said many times before, we need to press both sides to begin negotiations.
And the national security advisors of the U.S., Japan, and the Philippines held their first joint talks earlier this month and agreed to strengthen their defense cooperation as Washington and its partners reinforce their alliances to adapt to growing tensions over North Korea, China, and Ukraine, National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan said. Sullivan and his Japanese and Philippine counterparts discussed the turbulent regional security environment and how we can collectively work to enhance peace and stability in areas including freedom of navigation and economic security. Sullivan, Takeo Akiba of Japan, and Eduardo Ano of the Philippines said that they emphasized the importance of enhancing three-way cooperation, building on alliances between Japan and the U.S., and between the Philippines and the U.S. to maintain peace and stability in the Indo-Pacific, especially in the Taiwan Strait. Sullivan said the new trilateral framework is part of multiple alliances involving our nation in the Indo-Pacific region, including three-way cooperation with Japan and South Korea and the Quad Security Dialogue with Australia, India, and Japan.
These agreements are really appropriate and needed in today's environment. We must remember that China is doing the same thing with Cuba and our former allies like Saudi Arabia. We need to be working in those areas too.
An attack space drone may sound strange, but it may soon be possible based on a space drop and the successful flight of Boeing X-37 robotic spacecraft. While there can't be an attack space drone anytime soon, such a platform has been in development for many years and is making progress. It's called the X-37B, or the Orbital Test Vehicle, an unmanned space platform designed to enter space and then re-enter the atmosphere. The platform, now being developed by our Space Force, demonstrated an ability to deorbit and land at a NASA facility last year. Development goes back as far as 2006 as a NASA technology, and the unmanned space vehicle has spent 908 days in orbit. The OTV is thrust into space by a launch vehicle before returning to land as a space vehicle when re-entering the atmosphere. Recently, the platform has been more fully militarized. While many of its technologies aren't available for public consumption and are still in development, such a platform certainly introduces a wide range of significant tactical advantages. As a mobile platform, it's clear the X-37B could move faster and cover wider areas faster and more efficiently than existing satellites should it have sensors with sufficient range to detect ground and air threats. For example, overhead infrared warning satellites can detect the heat signature of an enemy missile launch to provide early warning. Should this be capable of something similar, it could bring a wider, more continuous, and mobile threat warning system beyond the Earth's atmosphere.
This is amazing. Good job, Space Force. I wonder if China or Russia is working in this area too. I would guess they are. The world is changing and maybe getting more dangerous. And that's the news. As Americans, it's our responsibility to ensure that our nation is well-run and on the right path. Politics and politicians are confusing, but we can work together. Concerned Veterans for America can assist you, even if you're not a vet, in getting involved and getting our nation back on track. Working with them is one of the things I do. Check CV4A.org. That's cv4a.org. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. Coming up on Front Lines of Freedom, I'll share comments by the Colonel. We'll enjoy some warrant wisdom. Then we'll talk with General John Dragon Tykert. At ease, troops, take a break.
Fresh, flash, frozen from the American farmer every time. PatriotFoods.com, hit the shop now button. You're supporting a veteran family in need every time you shop. Look at us online, see how we give back. For the servicemen and women of this great country, we are fighting for the American farmer. PatriotFoods.com, promo code FREEDOM, 10% off today, folks. Shop now.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum. I buy Patriot Foods. It's great. PatriotFoods.com, promo code FREEDOM.
This is Marine Vet Skip Coriel with your home defense tip of the week. Look like sheep and you'll be eaten by wolves. According to interviews done with armed robbers, you are far more likely to be targeted by criminals if you look weak and helpless. Carry yourself with pride and military bearing, because many criminals can spot a soft target with one glance. Stay alert and aware of your surroundings. This is just one more way to keep your family safe. For more useful tips on home and personal defense, visit homedefenseshow.com.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum. It is 20 minutes after the hour, and you're in formation listening to the Front Lines of Freedom all across America. Now it's time for comments by the Colonel. Folks, our military still has a lot of combat vehicles and weapons, but we have a huge ammunition problem. Were a major war to begin, we'd probably last a week before our lack of many different munitions shut us down. That's scary. When Russia invaded Ukraine over a year ago, Ukrainian President Zelensky asked for ammunition, and we responded. Indeed, in the last 15 months, we've sent tens of billions of dollars of stuff to Ukraine, giving them exactly what they wanted. Army Secretary Christine Mormuth said our munitions production capacity is pushed to the absolute edge. Indeed, last August, one unnamed Pentagon official said that our stores of critical artillery rounds was uncomfortably low. A Pentagon spokesperson has said that we're making great strides to rebuild what was lost. Quote, of note, the department has enabled a rapid increase in the 155mm artillery ammo production from about 14,000 rounds a month in February of 22 to 20,000 rounds per month most recently, with plans to produce over 70,000 rounds a month in 2025, end quote. This is a 500% increase. And by the way, 155mm artillery rounds is our basic artillery. Now, this sounds good, but even with a 500% increase in 2027, we're still only halfway to being afloat. That's because by the end of last August, we had already sent over 800,000 155mm artillery rounds to Ukraine. That number has since increased to over 2 million, according to the Pentagon. That's a rate of over 130,000 rounds per month, which is nearly twice the increased production rate that we'll have in 5 years. And this shortage is not just in artillery rounds. It's true for many other munitions, including anti-ship and anti-aircraft missiles. Now, the Pentagon has taken steps to stop the hemorrhaging of our critical munition stock. It has taken, wherever possible, to purchase ammo for Ukraine from other countries. Hey, but our allies' stockpiles also have limits for sharing. So we're now pulling equipment and ammo from our units stationed in Israel and South Korea to help supply Ukraine. A good idea, unless those units find themselves in combat, and they are in very dangerous areas. And the Army is now seeking $118 billion from Congress to expand and mobilize its munitions production capabilities over the next 15 years. This will certainly be a huge help then, but not now. Oh, and then there's the communist Chinese threat to Taiwan. It's pretty clear that an invasion is very likely. In order to make that less likely, we need ammo to arm Taiwan and potentially to use in a war defending the island nation's de facto independence. It's the opinion of the chair of the House Select Committee on Chinese Communist Party that, quote, if we want to have a hope of stopping World War III, we need to arm Taiwan to the teeth right now, end quote. Since we don't have the ammunition to do that, we would have to field aging or otherwise obsolete ammunition to some kind of a new effect. This could mean taking certain missile systems that we were going to put into deep storage and potentially upgrade them somehow and give them to the Taiwanese. We're sure going to have to be creative. This also means that the Pentagon needs to seriously convince the private firms responsible for manufacturing the precision munitions that we need. And this also means that the Pentagon needs to seriously convince the private firms responsible for manufacturing the precision munitions that we need them and will need them for years to come. I agree. But think about this. If you just bought or inherited a munitions making factory, how would you expand your production? Run more shifts, yes. But where are you going to find the workers, much less workers with the skill and experience to make the ammunition? Build another plant? Sure, that takes money and time, and then you have to staff it. Apparently, no one in the Department of Defense ever thought about this. How can that be? Going back to Taiwan, China is the biggest threat our nation has ever faced, and China is very hostile towards our nation. And China knows how weak our nation and our military is. Well, hey, everybody knows that. So why wouldn't they move in the near future, as they've promised, to unite Taiwan with the mainland using force if necessary? Hey, they're regularly running air and naval exercises that penetrate Taiwan's air and sea space. To that end, a report released in January by the Center for Strategic and International Studies think tank found that the U.S. would quickly run out of critical munitions during a war with China over the future of Taiwan, and this assumes that we're not supporting Ukraine. One wonders how this crisis had not been noticed by anybody in the White House or Pentagon, or if they noticed it, they failed to act. If you were a general or an admiral or a secretary or assistant secretary in the Department of Defense or one of our services, is there any way you could not have known about this ammunition issue? Knowing it, what would you do? Of course, you'd bring it to the attention of your boss. And suppose nothing happened. Now what? How about resigning in protest? If a dozen or more senior folks had done so, even the mainstream media would have to notice it. But no one did anything like that, just as they didn't do when the idiotic abandonment of Afghanistan was ordered. Do we need people in leadership positions whose integrity will let them ignore a huge need for our nation in favor of keeping their jobs or getting the next promotion? No, we don't. This is a crisis situation caused by totally inept leadership. How else can you describe it? Given this quality of leadership in our military, is there any question why young people, especially from military families, are not joining our military? Our military seems to be good at pronouns and discussing white privilege, but not good in honorable leadership. It's time for a change. Deterring war is the only path to peace and stability, and it's incumbent upon elected officials to take decisive action to do so before it's too late. And we hope it's not already too late. And those are my comments for today. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. You're listening to Frontlines of Freedom. Now we get to enjoy some warrant wisdom with Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby. What do you have this week, Roland?
You know, it's often forgotten that military spouses deal with a lot of uncertainty, especially when it comes to their careers. And to help, President Biden recently signed an executive order to provide new aid to spouses. The nearly 20 actions in the directive are designed to help military spouses get hired and maintain stability in their careers, despite service-related moves. The president signed the new order while visiting Fort Liberty, which I had to look up because the last Fort Liberty I remember was a Camp Liberty in Iraq. And in a sign of our times, Fort Liberty used to be known as Fort Bragg, which is the largest U.S. Army base by population and home to about 47,000 soldiers. In any case, the new executive order will help spouses with acquiring work, childcare, and other challenges. The core of the order calls for developing a new plan for hiring military spouses in the federal government and retaining them. Another provision would increase hiring preferences for military spouses for jobs in federal agencies. And another aspect of the order is meant to increase work flexibility. A key component is meant to help spouses maintain their work and businesses even when moving for military deployments or change of stations. The order includes provisions for 5 days of administrative leave during such moves, as well as expanding opportunities for remote work. And for military spouses with their own business, Biden's order has directed the Small Business Administration to come up with new tools and resources to help families relocate their businesses. You know, according to the Department of Defense, 21% of military spouses are unemployed, and 48% find the hardest challenge is finding work after moving to a new location. So this is really long overdue. For Frontlines of Freedom, I'm Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby. Back to you, Colonel.
Thanks, Roland. I really enjoyed that. Straight ahead on Frontlines of Freedom, We'll discuss our nation's challenges with General John Tykert. Then we'll talk about the Korean War with veteran Doug Voss. All this is coming up. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. You're standing tall with the front lines of freedom. I'll be right back. Troops, it's time for sit-ups. Start with 50, take a break and do another 50, then stand at ease.
We were instrumental in passing the VA Mission Act, so more veterans could have options and freedom in their health care. We're leading the charge to end America's endless wars, bringing thousands of troops home and stopping trillions of dollars from being wasted. Our key to success? You. We bring your voice to our nation's leaders so we can all have a better future. We are Concerned Veterans for America, the voice of veterans for freedom and prosperity. Visit cv4a.org to learn more and join the movement.
Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to vetted veterans programs, mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Frontlines of Freedom promo code. Troops, welcome back to our nation's largest military veteran talk radio show, Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Troops, please do send me your comments and questions. Email me through frontlinesoffreedom.com. It's an honor to welcome retired Air Force General John Tykert. His call sign as a pilot was Dragon, and he's still known as Dragon, something as an Army guy I don't understand. John retired as the Assistant Deputy Undersecretary of the Air Force for International Affairs, responsible for worldwide international engagement on behalf of our Air Force and Space Force. So he's got some pretty good insights. So welcome, Dragon. Thanks for joining us.
Denny, it is awesome to be here joining you. Thank you for having me.
John, when and why did you decide you wanted to join the Air Force? How did that happen?
Denny, I grew up in the Pacific Northwest, on the very northwest tip of our country. And I grew up in a family that experienced a lot of love, but also really highlighted the importance of service to community and service to country. And then truly, I watched Top Gun in 1986, and I was sold on military aviation. And from that moment on, I had posters of F-15Es on my wall, and I wanted to serve my great nation. I wanted to do something as exciting as fly some of those magnificent machines in doing so.
That sounds great. So when did you become Dragon? How does that happen in the Air Force?
No, so that's a great question. When you get to your first operational assignment, which for me was in 1998, after about 6 months, you accumulate enough things that you've done that would be characterized as buffoonery. And certainly lieutenants are filled with buffoonery.
Yes,
and
sir.
So for me, after about 6 months, then there's this big formal ceremony called the naming ceremony. And you have no say in it as the guest of honor. And they use all of those stories that they've accumulated against you. And the rule typically is that it's got to sound cool, but it's got to be based on something stupid you did. And so Dragon certainly sounds cool. And I don't tell the whole story, but it has to do with Zaragoza, Spain and nuclear weapons. And I've had it since 1998. And I love the name, but the story certainly is not so great.
Well, which means you were a human being and a normal lieutenant.
No, and you know, all thrust and no vector is what we say about lieutenants sometimes, and that's certainly true for most.
Okay. So you were in the Air Force for quite a while. What were some of your more interesting assignments?
Denny, I would consider every single one absolutely fascinating. That first assignment where I got the call sign Dragon was an opportunity to employ that F-15E in combat. And it was a time in 1998, 1999, where we hadn't had real combat except for Operation Desert Storm for a long, long time. And it just happened to be the case that we were doing some active combat flying in northern Iraq. And we had the war in the former Yugoslavia in 1999. That was a 78-day air war known as Operation Allied Force. And so to me, just to be able to start out my career employing that weapon system that I had learned and trained on as a lieutenant and as a young captain was absolutely life-shaking and shaping. And then I went on to train others in the F-15E, and I went on to be a test pilot and fly that magnificent F-22 Raptor. But to me, the thing that has highlighted my experience is serving my country and supporting and defending the Constitution of the United States, and doing so in challenging environments alongside of people that I like, respect, appreciate, and admire. And I'll tell you, every single assignment of mine from when I first entered the Air Force and took that oath in 1994 as a commissionee out of MIT ROTC has been magnificent, because I've been able to do all of those things. And again, do them alongside of people that are like-minded, that I like, respect, appreciate, and admire.
You know, in life, working with people that you like and respect, doing something that is appropriate and necessary, how much better does life get?
No, and Denny, less than 1% of our nation now serves in the military. So it's a very special fraternity, special group of people. And just to be able to have that important mission in life to support and defend the Constitution and those amazing principles, and to do so alongside of like-minded people, is just such a joy and such a blessing. And to me, that was the highlight of my Air Force and military career.
I could not disagree with a single thing you said. I feel the same way about my time in Mother Army. Okay, I know that your next to last assignment was as the senior defense official and defense attaché to Iraq, leading to the front lines of the whole government national security strategy and policy in a really challenging environment. What was that like?
Denny, so to me, as a guy that had flown over Iraq and dropped bombs in Iraq, it was just fascinating several years later to be there on the ground. And my job there, working alongside of the U.S. ambassador, Matt Tueller was his name, was to fulfill our national strategy there in Iraq. And you know that there continue to be major challenges with ISIS. They are defeated but not destroyed, and there are some safe havens there in Iraq. And to try to make the Iraqi military stronger in ways that support their interests and ours at the same time, with this underlying challenge of Iranian malign influence. And frankly, that's the far more difficult challenge there in Iraq today. And frankly, it's been that way for a long time. But really, those militia groups that are under the command and control of Iran really make things difficult for the current Iraqi government, who is trying to maintain their sovereignty and create a situation of prosperity and peace. But they're just being undermined constantly by their neighbor to the east. And so for me, to be there shortly after the Soleimani killing by the United States in early 2020, and then to just pick up the pieces in the aftermath of that in a very violent time, exacerbated by the challenges of COVID, and for 14 months there, which was a long, long deployment, was to me a really eye-opening opportunity to see the cutting edge of national security strategy and policy applied in the most challenging of conditions.
Well, it certainly had to be one heck of a challenge. You know, we did a really good job of helping Japan and Germany transform after World War II, but there weren't any bad guys on the border we had to be fighting while we were doing it. I can't imagine the challenge of trying to do that in Iraq in that environment. It had to be a challenge, maybe too big a challenge. I don't know.
Yeah. So Denny, I have a heart that breaks for the Iraqi people, because these are individuals, human beings that finally got out of the shackles of Saddam Hussein, who was just a brutal dictator, and now have spent the last 20 years trying to form their own country. In a lot of ways, they've done magnificent at it. But just to have a neighbor as powerful as Iran that is undermining the rightfully elected government of Iraq, and doing things like assassinations and executions and rocket attacks and drug running and weapons running, and to some extent, even, believe it or not, supporting ISIS, even though it's a Shia and Sunni conflict, but just doing things that undermine the rightfully elected government. And while I was there, they had elected a new prime minister. Mustafa al-Qadhimi was his name. He's no longer the prime minister. But if we had a hope of a single individual that had a good, positive mindset for his country and thirsted for a sovereign nation, it was Qadhimi. And he was just undermined constantly by these militia groups that are semi-governmental entities in Iraq, but that in large part are supported by Iran and doing things counter to the best interests of Iraq, is really just a tough situation. And even someone like Qadhimi couldn't turn the corner there in Iraq to really create something that was more peaceful, prosperous, secure, and sovereign than his predecessors.
Yeah, that's mission impossible. I guess the only country that I'm aware of that has even come close to handling situations like that is Israel. And their situation is the same, only very different. But I do hurt for the people in Iraq. that's an awkward situation.
Well, it is. And if you think about that arc of instability that is created by Iran, and that includes Syria and Lebanon and Yemen and Iraq, they have just fostered this environment in the Middle East that hinders the ability of populations in that region to move on and to create something that they can be proud of and that they can raise their families in.
Yes, sir. You know, and the issue is the average citizen just wants to be left alone to live their life. And if there's somebody who's prepared to kill you or kill your family members if you don't do what they want you to do, which is not what you want, that's not a really good environment. And I was a Mideast war planner for over 4 years. I didn't have a clue how to do that either. So I just appreciate the difficulty there.
No, and I do give credit to the Iraqis because they actually have now for 20 years had a string of actual elections. And it's not a Jeffersonian democracy. We shouldn't expect them to be. But I think they've made good progress. And if they can figure out how to counter some corruption and get beyond these militia groups that are undermining their sovereignty, then I think there's real hope there. And I'm glad that we as the United States are still there with limited number of troops supporting the Iraqis as they're doing the important business against ISIS and really just trying to stand up a country that will last.
Yes, sir. We're about out of time for this segment. We need to talk about some of the major challenges that our nation is facing. So troops, stay with us. Dragon will stay with us. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Yeah, it's push-up time. I want you to do 103 push-ups. That's how many I do, well, some days. Then take a break, but stay in the area. We'll be right back.
This hour of Frontlines of Freedom is brought to you by HelpVet.net. HelpVet.net is an online resource and information center dedicated to the welfare of those who have sacrificed for the freedoms, ideals, and morals we Americans hold dear to our hearts. At HelpVet.net, find information on benefit-related issues from education, healthcare, military pay, retirement, VA loans, and resources on education, finance, legal, health and wellness, the military life, moving and housing, travel and entertainment, and much, much more. Visit HelpVet.net, HelpVet.net.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum. This is the final formation for this hour on Frontlines of Freedom. We're continuing our conversation with General John Dragon Tykart about our nation's challenges. John, we got to start somewhere. How about Japan and the Philippines? You've got some background there, don't you?
I do, Denny. And the good news, at least for me, is that those are two amazing treaty allies that frankly have challenges because they're on the front lines of this thing that we call strategic competition, primarily against a very aggressive and malign China controlled by the Communist Party. But I'm just proud of Japan, for one, that is committed to doubling their defense budget in the next 5 years, and the Philippines for standing up against the rogue actors that they face in the South China Sea every single day and doing so bravely and doing so as a part of this broad, unique American advantage that is our network of allies and partners around the world.
We're really in a new Cold War, aren't we?
It's interesting. People want to define it as a Cold War. If you want to consider that there is a fundamental difference in the worldviews and the international desires between the two major powers of the day, then you could call that a Cold War. The thing that is the biggest challenge that we've got to consider is the fact that the United States, alongside of that network of allies and partners, has created an international world order that has allowed humanity to thrive for the last 80 years since the end of World War II. And that international world order has been free, open, prosperous, and secure. And it certainly is the desire of our competitor, China, that would like to undermine that world order and reshape it in one that selfishly meets the desires of the Chinese Communist Party. And it is up to us primarily, but really alongside of that unique web of allies and partners, to make sure we can continue this world order that, again, has allowed everyone to thrive for the last 80 years or so.
Yes, that certainly is our goal. I don't know that we can do that. I mean, I've been looking at things like our military is so short on some kinds of ammunition, we couldn't last a week in a live war. And our enemies know that. We're not the same country we were 5 or 10 years ago, are we?
So there are some challenges there, Denny. And really, I think it comes down to this thing that we call deterrence. And deterrence is what ultimately won us the Cold War, which is using our capability and our will to stop our adversaries from doing those things that we do not want them to do. And right now, especially with respect to China's ambitions to reassimilate their rogue province, their words not mine, of Taiwan, that we far prefer deterrence over having to actually fight an engagement. But it does take capability. And I think we've got some pretty strong military capability that the Chinese know about and can't match, but it also takes will. And I think where we really have to be concerned right now is whether we as a nation have the true will to stand up for those principles and that world order and make sure that we fend off those that would do harm to that world order. And if you look at a domino effect, Denny, I see a very direct application of our pullout in Afghanistan to Russia's attack against Ukraine. I think that our weakness bred a provocative attack by Russia and Ukraine because they didn't think that we would stand up against them. China's watching what's going on in the world, and they're watching what goes on in Ukraine. And if we do not actively, with capability and will, fight for our interests and defend those interests, then rogue actors like Iran, Russia, North Korea, and certainly China will do what they must, because all that they respect is strength and power, and they thrive on weakness, and we must not show it. And that's where I'm concerned, is if we show enough will, or if we fail to do so, then it makes the world a whole lot more dangerous.
Yes, I could not agree more with you, John. I think you've hit the nail hard on the head. My concern in Ukraine is that I don't see it, that battle, going anywhere besides a lot of people being killed. I think the major move right now should be encouraging both of them to start negotiations to end their battle and come up with a peace that they can live with. And I don't see that happening at all.
No, and I don't either. And frankly, if I was sitting in the shoes of Zelensky in particular, but Putin to some extent, it would be tough to imagine where we go to actually end this conflict. But I think that it is a worthy conflict for the United States and the West to continue to support for three primary reasons. Number one, I think that people thrive on weakness. And if we give in to aggressive behavior like Putin's in Ukraine, then I think it makes the world a whole lot more dangerous. That's number one. Number two, I think that Putin would not stop if he took Ukraine. And whether that was attacks to further to the west or to his south, I think the world becomes more dangerous once he took Ukraine. And then number three, I think truly China is watching what's going on in Ukraine. And if we are too eager to appease aggression, then I think China sees that appeasement as an opportunity for them to undertake aggression. And that would certainly not be in any of our best interests.
Good point. I certainly see that point and agree with you. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with General John Teichart. John, I'm particularly concerned about all the things China is doing in our nation. They've got a presence at most of our major universities. They're buying up land. Should we consider that hostile to us? Should we have laws to prohibit it? Or is it just how things are?
So, Denny, there is a communist Chinese strategy that goes back to the publication from two CCP colonels in 1999 that's called unrestricted warfare.
Yes.
And it essentially means that their strategy is to attack in all ways, at all times, in all domains, in all locations, in all spectrums. And they have been doing that successfully around the world. And certainly they've been doing that in the United States. And I just think about $700 billion a year in stolen American intellectual property by China, or Chinese communist clubs on college campuses, or Chinese communist police stations in major U.S. metropolitan areas, or stolen personnel records from the United States government. They are actively undertaking aggression in accordance with unrestricted warfare from their strategy in 1999. And we have to do whatever we can to put a halt to that, because they are currently a threat to us. And we must not allow them to operate in the seams of our laws and in the seams of our agencies in the United States. And it must be a focus of ours to root out that malicious behavior, because they would love to do nothing more than to undermine what's going on in the United States and to diminish the power and the effectiveness of our institutions and to steal whatever they can along the way.
Yes, sir. That is exactly how I see it. And I think that is one of the major reasons why I think I tend to use the word Cold War more often, because I feel we're at war with them within our country. And yes, they are following the plan that they published decades ago. Unrestricted warfare, however they can do it, and it doesn't necessarily mean shooting. They're making the progress they want to make. But I consider that probably the biggest threat we have to face, but not the only one. And we've got to look at everything that's going on in the world.
We do. And let me just jump into unrestricted warfare just a little bit, Denny, if you don't mind me doing so. Our national strategy calls China a pacing challenge. I think there was a bit of a debate in the administration whether they should call them a pacing challenge or a pacing threat. And they came down on the side of the doves. And a pacing challenge just sounds like something that we're playing ping pong or cornhole or something else, and it's a docile environment. And I think we've got to realize that China doesn't see it that way, that they have been doing their best to actively undermine us for a long time. They see us as a threat. And until we see them as a threat, then we won't actually take the actions that we need to against them.
Yes, sir. That says it all. That's the best summary I could possibly come up with. John, thank you for your comments today. I really appreciate your insights, and I thank you for your service to our nation. We have to stay as friends. I have to have you back on the show again. Thank you for joining us today.
Denny, I have loved my time. Thank you for your service to our country, and I know the vast majority of your audience have served our country, and those that serve today and those that have served recently stand on the shoulders of giants. And so I just want to say thank you to the giants out there that are your listening audience, and thanks for having me on, and I look forward to the next opportunity.
Until next time. This concludes the first hour of the show. We'll start the second hour discussing the Korean War with Doug Voss. Then Army vet Terry Johnson will share about how veterans can deal with the VA in the area of disabilities. And Diane Raver will review the movie of the month. Of course, we'll conclude with our weekly mailbag, military history, and our self-defense report. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time for pull-ups. Do 30 good ones, grab some protein, rehydrate with water, and finally, put a big smile on your proud-to-be-an-American face and send me your thoughts by email or on Facebook.